Welcome to Let's Talk Legal, part of Coastal Daybreak every Tuesday morning and brought to you by Harvell and Collins, attorneys at law. You can call in now to have your legal questions answered by attorneys Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins. Call in now with your questions at 252-247-7282.
And welcome to Let's Talk Legal, and joining us this morning, of course, Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning, Ben. Morning,
How are y'all today?
We are good. How are you?
Doing well. What are we talking about today?
Ben, today we're going to talk a little bit about personal injury. We haven't really gone through this topic here maybe
in a while,
four, five, six months, maybe even longer than that. And there's just so many moving parts with regard to how to properly handle a personal injury claim. And what we're talking about in most cases is a motor vehicle accident. I mean, personal injury could be any type of personal injury. It could be being injured at someone's property. You know, it could be being injured at a business. It could be, you know, anything, basically.
And a lot of these days with all the repairs going on, I imagine that happens, right?
It can be any injury to your person.
Right. That's it.
Motorcycle. Walking along a sidewalk and getting hit by a car. Medical malpractice.
Boating. Right.
Falling or injuring yourself on someone else's property. But obviously, and Wes is going to lead the program today, but out of the gate here, I'll say a few more words. Obviously, the most common is, of course, an automobile accident. That seems to be when you say the word personal injury and you talk about that substantive area of the law, people think automobile accident. Last but not least, an injury on a boat. Lots of injuries in and around boats and docks. Okay. Any injury to your person, to your body, to your emotional well-being is considered a personal injury case in the state of North Carolina.
Okay.
So, you know, I think most folks have seen the programs, the commercials on TV, don't sign anything until you talk to us, that type of thing. And that's just getting into the insurance coverage issue. I mean, obviously, when you're talking about a personal injury claim, there's certain things that the attorney evaluating it is going to need to look at from beginning to end. I'm going to get to that in a minute, but backing into this, kind of the first thing that someone who's involved in an accident needs to know is that in many cases, the carrier, the insurance carrier may want maybe want to quickly resolve it, may want to quickly settle it. And therefore there might be paperwork that is provided to you by the respective insurance carrier for you to accept a check and then be done with the case. And then you don't have any further rights. Well, you have to be careful about that because, you know, you could have injuries you don't know about. You could have things that show up later. You could have, a back injury, for example.
Well, let me ask you a question kind of off the start of this. The other person, the person who hit you, the other person's insurance is the one you end up talking to, right?
Yeah, and that's another whole, you know, kind of area of the outline that we look at. Initially, you will be looking at the insurance as it relates to the tortfeasor, the person who hit you, put it that way.
Right.
I mean, that's going to be the primary coverage that we're normally looking at. And then we get into other issues such as underinsured motorist or uninsured motorist and stacking of different coverages that we'll talk about.
But my question is really, so you have two things happening. You've got the damage to the vehicle.
Right.
Your vehicle. Mm-hmm. And then you have the damage to your person.
Right.
Are sometimes when they make an initial offer, are those mixed together so that you may be confused about what's being talked about here?
Normally, they're separated out. Mm-hmm. Normally, you're talking about the claim with regard to the vehicle first. I normally don't have a problem with that getting resolved relatively quickly because folks normally want to get their car fixed or get a new car or whatever. And it's usually a little bit easier to determine exactly what's wrong with the car.
Right.
It may not be able
to be that easy
to determine exactly what's wrong with your body.
That's right.
Or whether there's an issue that may come up later on. So I would caution to act too quickly with regard to a resolution and signing off on the actual injury part mm-hmm. of the settlement, if there was a settlement offer. But normally just accepting a check for the car, mm-hmm. as long as you're happy with it, the value, so on and so forth, taking into consideration such as, you know, any liens on the car, paying those off, those type things, then I normally don't have a problem with that.
Yeah, just read what you're signing.
But there's some analysis yeah. that takes place, obviously, with regard to that. We want to make sure what's being offered is reasonable. We need to make sure that in the event the vehicle is damaged to the point where it can't be reasonably mm-hmm. repaired, we need to look at that and the value of that. So there's a lot of different things that we look at as it relates to, you know, whether the property settlement is reasonable or not. Mm-hmm. But again, okay. you can, in many cases, do that pretty much from the beginning and then back into the right. personal injury, the actual injury part of it, in due time. Mm-hmm. So, you know, be careful with regard to that from the beginning. I do want to, you know, get to the point where we talk more about the insurance, but I think it's logical to next talk about kind of the big picture with regard to the claim itself. Mm-hmm. One thing that any attorney is going to look at when we're talking about any type of personal injury claim in this state is contributory negligence. Mm. Okay, that's mm-hmm. that's a big issue in North Carolina. North Carolina is one of, I think it's either 5 or 6 states that has that as a defense to recovery in mm-hmm. any type of negligence case. And basically what that is that, you know, if you're 1% negligent, if you rolled out past the stop sign, you know,
right.
and they nicked the front of your car, but the person was out of their lane and, mm-hmm. and driving erratically, well, you roll past the stop sign and maybe that showed up in the police report. And then obviously the defendant then has a strong argument that you were somewhat responsible for this accident. So in North Carolina, that is a complete bar to recovery.
Complete bar.
Complete bar.
Not a percentage.
It's not what's called comparative negligence. Most jurisdictions are comparative. The jury in the case would have an opportunity mm-hmm. to weigh all the facts and circumstances and make a determination as to what percentage, for example, the plaintiff, the person who was injured, was responsible, and that would basically serve as an offset for the damages that were awarded.
That's got to make it tough to it make does, a case stick.
It does make it tough. I mean, you know, that's one of the first things we look at. Mm-hmm. For example, you know, if you get hit by a car walking down the street, were you walking on the right side of the road? If you weren't walking on the correct side of the road with regard to that, then you get into issues with regard to contributory negligence.
And let's pause a minute and say, you know, Ben, if you're walking down the road, mm-hmm. there is a proper way to walk down the road.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So let's just review that real quick. We have a case right now that is addressing that. Wes,
right. yeah, basically,
what is the right way listeners to know to walk down the road?
The easy way to remember is to walk toward the traffic.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so far left. So you should be walking toward the traffic, not against the traffic.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a statute on point with regard to that.
Yes.
So, I mean, if you're in a situation where you're walking in the neighborhood mm-hmm. and you're walking against the traffic all the way over to the left, that's the way it basically reads, mm-hmm. you're doing right.
Mm-hmm.
In the event that you're on the other side of the road or you're walking down the middle of the road and you're hit by someone, then you might have an issue with regard to contributory negligence. That's
wow.
just an example.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, North Carolina really is not a very favorable state as it relates to those who are injured. We have limitations with regard to damages that are very much driven, in my opinion, I think mm-hmm. that most attorneys would agree, by the insurance lobby. We have contributory negligence, which is something that the insurance lobby certainly does not want to go away
mm-hmm.
because, you know, in the event we have more of a comparative negligence type situation,
oh, yeah.
a lot more cases will go to trial.
Mm-hmm.
But when you talk about this contributory negligence, which is, again, this 1% responsibility, this 1% you were liable for what happened to you, you can't recover at all.
Mm.
But there is a defense to that called last clear chance. So in the event that you're the plaintiff, for example, you bring a lawsuit saying, you know, negligence, personal injury negligence, defendant raises contributory mm-hmm. negligence as a complete bar, then the plaintiff would then have the opportunity to raise in their pleadings last clear chance. And basically what that means is that although I may have been negligent, or I may have been 1%,
right,
or a low percentage responsible, you had the last clear chance to avoid this. For mm-hmm. example, I may have rolled past that stop sign just a little bit, but you saw me do it, mm-hmm. you know, 5 seconds before.
You had a clear
impact.
View. You had a clear view.
It was clear right. view, and you yeah. easily could have avoided that, but you didn't do that.
Mm-hmm.
So you sometimes get into more of a factual determination by a jury when you're talking about last clear chance.
Mm-hmm.
But as you can tell, Ben, you know, when a lawyer sits down with a plaintiff or a potential plaintiff, someone who's been hurt in an accident, just because they've been hurt, potentially even at the negligence of another in this state, that doesn't mean there's going to be an absolute recovery.
Mm.
You've got to look at these issues with regard to contributory negligence very closely, because most lawyers do not want to spend all the time and effort and money mm-hmm. necessary to advance, you know, a significant personal injury claim
yeah.
if you end up, you know, at a zero at the end of the day because of the contributory negligence.
Right. In other words, you need to be very truthful with your attorney about everything that happens, right? Don't leave out anything.
Well, a good attorney is going to make sure they have all the information before they take on the case, because almost all personal injury cases are based on a contingency.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of the – a lot of cases are not. A lot of cases are more hourly, flat fee, that mm-hmm. type thing. But a personal injury case is normally based on – kind of the standard is one-third of the recovery pays the lawyer.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the lawyer needs to be good at analyzing the case before right. they decide to take on this what can sometimes be a monster of a case, which takes a lot of time and effort and work, because I don't think most lawyers want to work for one-third of zero.
That's right. But more to come in a moment here on Let's Talk Legal. If you'd like to ask a question, 247-7282. Coastal Daybreak here on the Talk Station, FM 107 and AM 1240. Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins, attorneys at law, online at harvellandcollins.com, where you can listen to past shows and look them up by subject. All right. What else?
So talking about, you know, personal injury claims, we just went through contributory negligence in North Carolina, which is a complete bar to mm-hmm. recovery. You know, other things that we look at is that, you know, as the attorney handling the case, in many cases, you know, you got to make some decisions now under what's a relatively new law in North Carolina. It's actually been on the books since 2011,
mm-hmm.
Relative to what evidence you can put on dealing with medical expenses. That's an important issue, because before 2011, you used to be able to put on evidence before the jury as to all the medical expenses, so the jury would have, you know, a good picture as it relates to, you know, the injuries,
mm-hmm.
you know, the cost of the surgery. I mean, that's a good measuring stick.
Sure.
Yeah. I mean, it's not that hard to prove what those actual damages are if you can put that evidence on, mm-hmm. because you get the medical records, you get the billings, so on and so forth. So, and that's a good measuring stick for the jury as to what you've been through as it relates to your injuries. Well, that changed in 2011. You can't put on all of the evidence of the medical expenses anymore. You can only put on evidence of the bills that haven't been paid, or the out of pocket. So when you got like a third party payor, you know, like a, you know, your insurance, your health insurance, or you got a Medicare, Medicaid covering it, then they don't get to hear, the jury doesn't get to hear about the evidence as to things that third parties paid. So it's not necessarily a very accurate representation of what you've been through as it relates to your accident.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, a lot of attorneys dealing with this have made the decision not to put on any evidence of medical records, for example, or medical billing. For example, depending on what the case is about and the type of case it is and the particular situation with regard to the case, it may be more beneficial and more accurate for the jury to analyze the case from a standpoint of, you know, just the life care plan, for example.
Right.
If there's a significant accident and someone is going to need a life care plan of some sort, meaning they're going to need someone helping to take care of them
right.
for the rest of their life, depending on the circumstance. Now, that's a pretty catastrophic type accident if we're talking about life care plans. But, mm-hmm. I mean, that happens.
But it sounds like you're going from a just the facts, ma'am, kind of story to a let me hear your story.
That's right, yeah. The life care plan is mm-hmm. going to kind of tell from an expert perspective what it looks like this person is going to need over their lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
So the jury can make a determination based on those type of future damages. Okay, so you've got that part of it. You've got the pain and suffering part of it, which mm-hmm. obviously they get to hear about. The jury gets to hear about the complexity or the more, well, the actual pain and mm-hmm. the things maybe the person can't do anymore, the limitations that they have on their life. They used to go surfing, for example. They can't do it anymore. They mm-hmm. used to play basketball. They can't do it anymore. You know, these type of things. So, you know, the lawyer has to really analyze the big picture with regard to these damages because, you know, if you've got a life care plan that's hundreds of thousands of dollars or seven figures or mm-hmm. more, millions of dollars, and then you've got out-of-pocket medical expenses of, you know, $50,000 or something like that, or mm-hmm. $20,000, $30,000, $40,000, then it doesn't make a whole lot of sense to put on that evidence, really, of this out-of-pocket when the real medical expenses were maybe
right.
$500,000. So, but this, we're talking kind of a bigger...
Sure.
A bigger case here.
Right. Well, if you take something where somebody is, is severely injured, they're going to be confined to a wheelchair.
Absolutely.
Then you got to reconfigure your house. You got to change lots of things in your life.
You need a handicap van.
Yeah.
You need a driver. You need, you know, mm-hmm. there's lots of things that would need to be done. Yeah, no doubt about that.
You're still the provider for a family. You know, you still, you may have to you know, I know somebody had to remodel their kitchen, for example, so they could access it from the wheelchair.
Yeah. So you have to take all of those things into consideration. And, you know, as you can tell, Ben, when you sit down with a client for the first time and you're dealing with whatever the issues are that they are dealing with in their daily life
mm-hmm.
and you're analyzing the facts with regard to the case, man, you're at the tip of the iceberg. There's a lot to do for that client to make
right.
sure they get everything they're entitled to. There's a lot to do to make sure that we try this case correctly, that mm-hmm. we put on the correct evidence for the jury, that we don't make a mistake by putting on part of the evidence that maybe is not going to really carry the day or may devalue the case,
mm-hmm.
that we get the right expert witnesses and have the life care plan put in place. So these things don't happen overnight. It takes time. Other things, obviously, as we're working on these cases, you know, being in touch with the client, the family, so we see what progress the person is making during, you know, this very important period of time, hopefully of healing after mm-hmm. the accident is important, too, because that helps us make a determination as to what the needs are going to be in the future as well. So a lot of work to do, you know, to work these cases up, no doubt, lots of factual things to take into consideration and lots of legal things to take into consideration.
Hmm.
So probably the next logical thing that we need to discuss with regard to this is, all right, I'm in an accident. I'm injured pretty significantly. I understand there's some insurance out there somewhere mm-hmm. in this crazy insurance world that's supposed to cover this or help me with this. I'm not sure what it is. Where's the insurance?
Yeah.
Okay. So the most logical place to look is where? Is
mm-hmm.
is to the person, as you said earlier, the person who hit me.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So we're entitled under law, under the statute, to get information with regard to the coverage mm-hmm. that this person had. We can get a copy of the declaration page to determine what the liability coverage is in this particular accident.
Mm-hmm.
We're not necessarily in a position at this point in time to determine what assets the person has who hit us.
Right.
But we can find out what the insurance coverage was.
Yeah.
So,
and in North Carolina, you're required to carry liability.
You're required to carry it. Sometimes folks get in accidents or cause accidents and they don't have it.
Mm-hmm.
That happens sometimes. And in that situation, then we look at our own insurance. It's
mm-hmm.
called UM coverage, uninsured motorist coverage. So that's something a lot of people maybe have heard of, but they don't know exactly how it works. But that's a big part of a lot of accidents that we end up dealing with.
We'll come back to that in just a moment. Again, if you want to go online at harveyallencollins.com and find this show, we'll be popping up here pretty soon. But then you also have other shows, too, that you can check out for your own legal life. If you'd like to call us now with a question, 247-7282. Welcome back to the program here on Coastal Daybreak on the Talk Station, FM 107 and AM 1240, of course, with Harvell and Collins here on Let's Talk Legal. We're talking personal injury and insurance.
Right. We're talking about insurance issues. And, you know, here in the last little segment of the program, we can probably pour over into next week and talk more about this, Ben. But, you know, these moving parts with regard to the insurance coverage in the event of an accident, personal injury accident, is very important. We're talking about motor vehicle accidents primarily, so you're looking at the primary carrier first, and then you're looking at any other coverage that may be available. So we'll jump over to the uninsured motorist or the underinsured motorist coverage, which is coverage that you have under your own policy. Many times, in almost every situation, when you have, let's say, coverage of $100,000 on your policy, you're also going to have this, the equal amount of uninsured or underinsured motorist coverage. But that's something that you can look at to make sure that you do have, you know, that, that coverage. Because what that happens is that in the event, let's say that you have an accident with someone who caused an accident, you're injured, you got medical expenses, bills, so on and so forth, but the driver didn't have insurance, then you have a right to make a claim on your own insurance under that UM coverage. In the event, let's say the person who hit you, as you say, and who is responsible has $30,000 of coverage, the minimum, but you have $100,000, well, that means that you can tap into your own policy to the tune of $70,000 so that it'll be a complete coverage, you know, there of $100,000. There's a process that you go through in order to do that. In many cases, you know, it's kind of like you may end up in a situation where you're almost adversarial to your own insurance.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask you. I mean, which is tougher? I would think sometimes your own insurance might be even harder.
Well, where that normally, how that normally works is, you know, normally there's a tender from the person, insurance carrier who hit you.
Yeah.
And, you know, that tender is made, and then you have to put your own insurance carrier on notice. And then in many cases, there's an arbitration clause in your own insurance policy. So then the damages and the amount of recovery under your own policy are in many cases arbitrated. That means there would be a panel or a single arbitrator that would hear all the evidence. Like, it's like a trial without a jury. And they would make a determination as to the coverage under your own policy and the amount paid.
We'll talk more about that next week, too. But if you want to find out in the meantime, you want to call on the folks at Harvell and Collins, go to harvellandcollins.com.